everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. We're off to a good start already, it seems, even before the meeting. So, Ms. Hirsch, would you be willing to call the roll, please?
Good morning. Chair Lilly.
Present.
Rep Lilly, present. Vice Chair Jordan.
Present.
Rep Jordan, present. Representative Green.
Present.
Rep Green, present. Representative Acomb.
Present.
Rep Acomb, present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Rep Anderson, present. Representative Bowe.
Present.
Rep Bowe, present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Rep Christensen, present. Representative Hassan.
Hassan is present.
Hassan present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy present.
Rep Murphy present. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Rep Nelson present. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Rep Erdahl present. Representative Wasluwick.
Wasluwick present.
Rep Wasluwick present. And Representative Zhang.
Present.
Rep Zhang, present.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. We have a quorum. Vice Chair Jordan, would you be willing to move the minutes from our February 17th meeting, please?
Yes, Chair Lilly. I have reviewed the minutes from February 17th and I move them.
Thank you. We have that motion before us. Any questions with regards to the minutes? I don't see any yellow hands or jumping up and down. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. We have our minutes approved from the February 17th meeting. I'm not sure exactly how this is going to go. Representative Marianani, are you on the phone or on the Zoom? So Representative Mariani has House File 1045, and I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to make it this morning or not, but we're super excited. He's carrying the bill for the Science Museum. So we're going to have a presentation this morning from the folks at the Science Museum. And with us this morning, I'll first start by moving the bill. I'll move that House File 1045 be laid over, or no, actually that's later. So I guess that's what I'll move. I'll move that it's laid over for possible inclusion in the legacy finance bill. So good morning, Ms. Brown. We had a nice visit the other day, and thank you for coming to our Zoom, if you will, and please tell us your story.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Allison Rumble Brown, and we will keep our conversation short. We don't want to get in the way of those stories that are important to help us all understand what's happening within our state, and stories are what bring our state and to life. So thank you for having us here today. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Allison Rumble Brown, President and CEO of the Science Museum of Minnesota, and we really appreciate your having us here. I'm joined by John Severson. He's our Director of Government Relations, and he'll be moving forward our presentation, our slide presentation, which I hope all of you can see. It's really been my honor to lead a storied and beloved Minnesota institution. And in fact, last month, January 11th, we celebrated our 114th anniversary, our birthday. And it's really been a pleasure to partner with you and to bring this this storied institution to help work with this all around the state and bringing forward our mission and our vision and our values. And each biennium, we are excited to share the great work we do and the statewide impact we have around our science, education, equity initiatives. But of course, this past year has been different than many other years that we've experienced. I'm going to take a few moments to talk about our legacy work in the broader context of our response to COVID-19 pandemic. Like many organizations that you've spoken with, many you hear about within the news, there's been a big financial impact of COVID-19 on the Science Museum of Minnesota and all of our colleagues in the arts and cultural sector. And what I'm really proud to say is that the arts and cultural organizations have pulled together to see what we can do for our community in response to the pandemic. But really, and so despite the financial challenges that we've experienced, we've stayed focused on serving our community. That's why we exist. And the really powerful ways that we've done this, and we've really shifted to delivering digital learning programs and experiences for Minnesota teachers, parents, with a focus on our kids and our students. They've been so affected by having moved to experiences like this, being on Zoom or whatever digital platform they have. And our teachers and our parents are really performing double duty while they're at home. They're being the caretaker, they're being the teacher, while they're learning during this period of how to take care of our kids who are our future. And so much of that was made possible, and thank you for this, by using our fiscal year 20 legacy appropriation. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we respectfully request a consideration of an increased appropriation of $1.4 million for the 2022 and 2023 biennium, so we can continue our statewide support of educators, students, and families. We look forward to sharing greater detail on our request with you today. And really, thank you again for having us here. And so while our financial position and the quality of our statewide programming quarter a much larger request, we also understand and aware that legacy requests traditionally far outpace the available resources that you will have. So we ask for a moderate increase to help us meet our goal of better understanding and serving the needs of Minnesotans as we emerge from the pandemic. And we know that we will emerge. It's just not going to be as quickly as we all would like to get together for those shared experiences you were talking about at the beginning of the meeting before it started. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I could spend the rest of our time here detailing the impact of the pandemic financially and emotionally on all of us. But to stay the course and highlight our important work, allow me to share just a few highlights. The museum has lost over 60% of our employees. These were fantastic employees, and this loss was no fault of their own. We started in March of 2020, so the beginning of the pandemic here, with 409 employees, and we're currently at 204. Even after significant expense reductions and other costs as well, we project that we will have an operating loss of over $15 million, that's $15 million, over the two-year period starting from last March through March of 2022, due to the pandemic's direct and indirect impact. So we expect the pandemic will affect us financially through March of 2022, so for a full year moving forward. We are fortunate that we received two PPP loans, one of $4.5 million in the first round of PPP and $2 million in the most recent round. Those are really critical for our ongoing operations and our ability to keep staff retained and meet our cash flow needs. But it can't keep us going forever. We are very grateful for the relief we have been awarded. We really are truly grateful. But I want to share to provide context and understanding the importance of legacy funding to help us fulfill our mission and provide continuing service to the people and students of Minnesota. And the good news, we are preparing to welcome back visitors to our public spaces beginning this coming Saturday, the 27th. It's very exciting for us. And this reopening has allowed us to reinstate 44 employees who've been on temporary layoff, or what some people call furlough. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and with your help, we pledge to be part of the solution as we start our state's economic engine. Through all of this, we remain committed to our mission, vision, and values and the people of Minnesota from whom we exist to serve. We're also committed to helping to optimize against the learning loss almost all kids experienced during this past year. In December, the museum adopted the goal of creating free access to virtual museum experiences for every elementary student in our state. To reach this goal, we developed a suite of experiences ranging from virtual Omni Film Fests to student self-guided explorations available at no cost to teachers and schools throughout the state. The development and delivery of this program is made possible with support of legacy funding. So thank you again for that support. In October, we at the museum also launched what we are calling Full STEM Ahead Initiative to benefit at-risk youth in St. Paul's Promise neighborhood. And it's based on STEM, so science, technology, engineering, math. It's a partnership between the St. Paul City School and the Science Museum's Kitty Anderson Youth Science Center. The museum opened its dormant education spaces, which we couldn't use because their school groups couldn't come to us, to provide a safe Wi-Fi-enabled supportive learning education environment for K through 8 students, kindergarten through 8th grade students, identified at greatest risk for successful in the virtual learning environment. This was an unfunded initiative that we championed by our staff and ultimately supported by a board of trustees and numerous private and corporate partners. And I'm really proud of this work. It's an example of identifying a great need, and the Science Museum staff stepped up to provide resources and solutions all in the environment of scarcity. Supporting kindergarten through 12th STEM education throughout Minnesota is one of the Science Museum's core commitments and is ongoing and our ongoing focus, and one that is annually supported with our legacy appropriation. So thank you again. Our superpower is continuous innovation steeped in research touching STEM topics in ways that spark and delight learners. The Science Museum is building science literacy and addressing opportunity gaps by transforming how science is taught throughout the state so everyone, girls, youth of color, and youth from low-income families in particular, see themselves as scientists even if they don't become one. Our world needs science, and that certainly has been shown this past year, and science education now more than ever. And we at the Science Museum take great pride in our role and status as a statewide asset. For 7 consecutive years, Science Museum field trips, school outreach, and teacher professional development programs reached all 87 Minnesota counties. And then the shutdown last March interrupted the streak. But I'm pleased to share that we reached 81 of 87 counties before the shutdown in March, and we had reservations in place to complete our 8th consecutive year. But still in FY20, we were able to reach nearly 100,000 Minnesota students. Now, closing in March is when our busiest school season would have started. March through June is when the bulk of our school tour groups come. We really missed out on tens of thousands of experiences and memories that are so crucial in sparking passion for students in science. But once again, we could not engage students directly in the classroom, so we retooled the existing curriculum for online delivery immediately and began creating new content. And after sweeping school building closes in March, there were dramatic increases in the number of school-based sessions accessing our online content as part of our classroom activities. A conservative estimate is that these engagements totaled over 38,300 for that fiscal year, which ended in June. And at the museum, we actively share excitement about the science we do with the public through exhibits, online programs, and so much more. And there were several notable highlights I want to share with you on the Science Museum Center for Research and Collections this year, because at the Science Museum, we don't just view science, we do science, including the Science Museum scientists conducted 26 field expeditions this year, sites ranging across Minnesota from Modena to Calumet to Marine on St. Croix. St. Croix Water Research Station scientists processed over 4,000 water samples and investigated blue-green algae blooms in Minnesota's remote natural areas, which we know we need to protect. With support from legacy funds, research and collections digitized over 13,000 object records, including Minnesota anthropological and biological collections, making this information available to classrooms and researchers around the world. The Science Museum continues to work intentionally with communities that are marginalized and underserved in STEM. The museum makes a difference, but our work is far from over. The local and national events of 2020 serve to heighten the need for science and education centers equity throughout our work at the Science Museum. This work includes ongoing efforts to ensure that the museum is welcoming to visitors regardless of financial status or identity. The museum is engaging directly with communities that have been historically excluded from science, and the museum is working to build more equitable communities through the Kitty Anderson Youth Science Center and Ideal Center programs. In our shortened year, so last fiscal year when we had to close in March, the museum was still able to welcome over 57,000 visitors that we call our Great Ticks, Great Members, and Great School programs. These are programs with significantly reduced or free access. That's 15% of our visitors use these programs, and this use has been growing and will continue to grow. So I'm pleased to share that on January 14th, we launched our Science is All of Us campaign in conjunction with a refresh and relaunch of our award-winning exhibit, Race, Are We So Different? Through the Science is All of Us initiative, we will provide a platform to explore different aspects of race and identity through the context of science. And I look forward to inviting all of you to view and participate in the experiences when it is safe to do so. Now, I'd like to ask John to share more detail on our request for the coming biennium. John, would you please do that?
Thank you, Thanks. President Brown. Mr. Severson? Okay.
Sorry.
That's all good.
Officially a meeting. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you, Allison. I will share that the Science Museum is incredibly grateful to this committee and to the citizens of Minnesota for the support that we have received through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Legacy Fund. Traditionally, this funding has allowed us to achieve three outcomes in our work, and that is the development and delivery of world-class educational programs in all 87 counties, the conservation, preservation, and exhibition of our cultural heritage assets in our collection, which today number over 2 million. And lastly, providing equitable access to these resources to all Minnesotans. Our request for this coming biennium is consistent with these outcomes and looks to build on the support and past successes of our previous legacy support. And what we will be doing is making sure that we are listening to our key audiences and stakeholders to ensure that we continue to be valuable to them as we emerge from that post-pandemic environment. I will say that the bulk of our request does lie within our statewide school and community initiative, which is where we are working with schools in all 87 counties. The goal there will be to seek to serve the post-pandemic needs of schools and families in that in all 87 counties. And the important part is that we will continue to deliver the quality standards aligned programming that we are known for and that schools have come to rely on as we continue this work. But we will also, at the outset of this work, we will conduct a research-driven and data-informed evaluation, reaching out to key stakeholders to ensure that we are getting the information we need to plan, develop, and deliver our next generation of STEM programming. Legacy is a very unique funding source for us in that it allows us to develop programs which we do deliver, and examples of that include our Storms on Stage and our RACE package, which combines both outreach programming and field trip experiences for students who we go out and we bring them in, and that's the 1-2 punch is very effective with that. We will also continue to engage educators as well as community organizations in very collaborative dialogue to define shared goals. That work has started with our fiscal 20 appropriation. We have been working with leaders in the Red Lake Nation as well as the Fond du Lac Reservation to ensure that we are meeting the needs of all communities in Minnesota. In addition, we will continue work in our Ideal Center, which Allison referenced, and that formerly known as Science House, a Ideal Center is an incredible resource centered around inclusion, diversity, equity, access, and leadership. And the team there works with teachers and administrators to identify and dismantle systems of systemic barriers to educational equity. And so the outcome of all of this will be innovative, relevant, and accessible programs for all Minnesotans, students, educators, and families. We will also, so in addition to that, with a major focus on our collections, we will continue to amplify our science through collaboration and increased access to our museum collections. We will continue to work on the work of digitizing our collections. As Allison shared, we were able to digitize over 13,000 records last year. And we will be focusing particularly on the needs of the schools and the communities that we are engaged with in our evaluation. The goal here is to really bring these objects to life and to broaden their reach and create learning opportunities both in person and in virtual platforms. And that is one of the silver linings of the pandemic, is much of the online and digital work has always been a goal of ours. And unfortunately, the pandemic has forced us to develop that, but there are incredible benefits which will continue as we move forward. And lastly, I want to acknowledge and thank this committee and the Office of Grants Management for the flexibility that we have been provided in the use of our fiscal 2021. Our appropriation is written such that it's about providing resources to the state of Minnesota and having that flexibility to be able to repurpose, rewrite our work plan in the face of the pandemic and the needs that we were facing. It was an incredibly important source of funding to help us meet Minnesotans where they were, and to provide those resources to families who were, you know, facing unparalleled challenges learning from home. And then also, I would like to say thank you to the team at the Office of Grants Management. You know, the partnership, it has been, there's been a lot more administration around this in the last year, just by virtue of necessity, and they have been great to work with. And with that, both Allison and I thank you for your time, and we are open for any questions you may have regarding our work.
Thank you. Thank you both. We do have some questions. Representative Green, I see your hand was up first. Good morning. Thank you,
Mr. Chair, and good morning. I could probably fill the rest of your time with questions, but I'm going to hold it to two. I've been hearing a lot from my district and even from my own family on the distance learning and how it's really not working. The kids that were getting A's and B's are now down to D's and sometimes F's because they're just not functioning well in the distance learning. So my question for either testifier is, when you're getting this stuff out, how do you gauge who's being able to see it? Because the schools obviously don't know. They can send it out on their computers. So how do you know how many people are seeing it? And how do you calculate if there is any benefit to it? I mean, what do you gauge that by?
President Brown or Mr. Severson?
Chair, Representative Green, that's an excellent question, and it's a big concern during this time. And I can answer some of it for you now, and we'd also get more information for you on that. We are fortunate at the Science Museum to have a team of experts in our research and evaluation group. And I think there are about 15 experts in this area. Almost all of them have their PhD in research and evaluations. And they partner with our education division. They're separate from the education division. And so they actually look for learning outcomes. I don't look for them. They assess learning outcomes. And so that's what they will be looking for, is those, are there learning outcomes that, so we state, the education division will state up front what the outcome should be, and then they can actually work with the students and assess, are those outcomes happening in a way that's valid through research. And then they will adjust the programs if those aren't happening. We do the same thing with our exhibits. We assess the same. Are there the learning outcomes from our exhibits as well? So that thinks an excellent question. And they also will look, we can also look, and that's a benefit with digital, are people actually using it? Are students actually using it? Now, what we can't tell, and this is a challenge to figure out, is, you know, students can log in, and are they actually there monitoring? But you can tell by keystrokes and things like that. So there are ways that they can assess these things. Excellent question and a good concern.
Representative Green.
Thank you for that. I'd be looking forward to seeing what you have on that, because it's not, and the reason I ask is because it's not just the Science Museum, it's in every other area of schooling that those things have to be brought forward and figure out what's going on. Only one more question for today, unless something else comes up, and that is, you know, you said that your attendance was down. I know you were closed for a while, and you're going to open up partially. Should the governor continue the lockdowns, have you calculated what this will mean for the Science Museum moving forward? Like say the governor continues the lockdowns all the way through 2021 and into 2022, and the legislator is not willing to stop him. What will that mean for the Science Museum?
President Brown.
Chair, Representative Green. That's also an excellent a question and concern we have, but I would say we're not concerned so much about the governor as we are looking at what does the science say. We're really driven by science. And then how do people respond? How are they feeling about being together? So we don't feel that the current cap that we are under is 250,000 at any particular time. And at this point, we don't feel that this is a cap that will limit, there'll be a limit for us, and there'd be more people coming than that cap at this point, because people are concerned about being together in a shared space, although it's very safe at the Science Museum. I think people waiting for the vaccination to come. We're working with firms to assess when people do want to come back. And I don't think it's just what the governor says. It's also people's perceptions about when they are comfortable coming back. So it's a bit that we are working with epidemiologists and scientists, as well as people's emotional state about when they're willing to be back in a shared space. That answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Green, is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That will be adequate. I'm sure there's other questions, and we've got other bills, so we can move forward.
Thank you, sir. Representative Zhang, good morning.
Thank you, Representative Lilly and Chair Mariani, for carrying this bill. Ms. Brown, I want to thank you for sharing with us what you have been doing throughout our whole state, and I really appreciate you speaking more on what you have done for equity work here in our state. If you or the government relations staff could send me more detailed information on your equity program that you have been doing, I'm really interested in it. And if you can also share with me from the budget that you are requesting, how much of that is being used for equity work, I would really appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. I see a lot of nodding, and I think she's the president's agreed to send that to you. And great questions. In the paper the other day, you're bringing in a new sculpture, I see. So hopefully we all can get down there and see the new pterodactyl or whatever you got, some flying thing. So. Well, thank you very much for coming. And members, if you have questions, please send them. I know Ms. Brown and Mr. Severson will be open to receiving those. And, again, thank you.
With that,
I'll renew my motion that House File 1045 be laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
So welcome, Representative Stevenson. I don't see your box, but I'm sure you're on.
I'm right. Good
morning.
Here.
Good morning, Chair Stevenson. I'll move that House File 481 be laid over for possible inclusion. So good morning, Chair Stevenson. And before, I don't know if you were on in the beginning, but apparently you have some deep connection with Representative Murphy. So that's kind of inside baseball here you got going. But, go ahead, Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll take any connection with Representative Murphy, but it's actually the mayor of Champlin who I think has the great connection with right. Representative Murphy. And I'm sure he'll tell the committee a little bit more about that when he appears in a minute. But I'm pleased to appear before the committee today to talk about a proposal to kind of finish off a great project that the state has been working on in various capacities for many years. We want to talk about linking two phenomenal assets to the North Metro, in the North Metro, the Elm Creek Park Reserve and the Mississippi River, in a streamlined trail running along scenic Elm Creek and the Mill Pond. And I know the committee received some handouts that shows how this project works. It's some land acquisition, it's some trail connections, it's a bridge. And I'll let the mayor kind of dive more into that when he talks. But I do want to just note that you know, these are all assets separately that the people of the northern suburbs really value and that the state has shown significant investment in recent years. You know, the Mississippi River in this area is a recreational pool created by investments in the Coon Rapids dam that the state made. The mill pond, which you'll see, was recently dredged and cleaned up with using state bonding dollars. There's also a dam that was built on it that was built with state dollars. There's shoreline restoration projects all along Elm Creek that the state has invested in. And most recently, thanks to the leadership of Chair Murphy and her historic investment bill last year, we're able to rebuild Mississippi Point Park on the shores of the Mississippi River there to make sure that the people of Champlain and the northern suburbs have great access to the river. So this bill is about connections and connecting all of those state investments and assets together so that the people in the area can really enjoy them. And perhaps with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to the mayor of Champlain and the pride of Hermantown, Ryan Karasik.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Mayor, welcome. It was nice to hear your conversation earlier, and welcome to the Legacy Committee, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here. And as always, I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation with Representative Murphy. She has been an inspiration to me ever since I was a child growing up in Hermantown and continues to be. And I'm immensely grateful for her service and her support of my new adopted community of Champlain. And thank you, Representative Stevenson, for laying the groundwork for this discussion. I think you did an exceptional job kind of laying out exactly what this is. As Representative Stevenson said, this really is a connection point. There's a convergence of so many things in the Mississippi River, the Rum River, the Elm Creek, as you see, is part of this. One thing I will mention as well is the Mississippi Regional Trail connection that comes out of Minneapolis all the way along the Mississippi, and it also converges in this location as far as a bike trail. So then that connection grows from the Mississippi Point Park area, as Representative Stevenson suggested. In just a minute, I'll show you some details of that is currently under development, is under construction. But just to kind of lay out a little bit of the diagram here that you have in your packet to show you how it's connected. So this plan, this Greenway Corridor, has been going on for decades and decades. And we haven't been able to put all the pieces of the puzzle together to finally connect us to the Elm Creek Park Reserve. And there's these last couple pieces of the puzzle that will finally make that connection. And the timing of it couldn't be better, considering with all the investment and time that has gone into the mill pond, that has gone into the dam, that has gone into Mississippi Point Park. Now that is under construction, we're at this last leg of things and making that connection. So when people come to that area, they'll be able to start from the Mississippi River and have a continuous trail segment that will bring you all the way to the 4,500-acre Elm Creek Park Reserve, where a person can spend an entire day biking or hiking or walking, spending time with family. I know during the pandemic, my family and I, who live, I can't point it out here, but I'm on this map here in that location. Thank you for pointing that out, if you can see that. And we spent hours and hours and hours out in the Elm Creek Park Reserve going for walks. And I think that providing this opportunity to all the people of Minnesota and the region, it would be wonderful. And having that focal point of the Mississippi Point Park with all the investments that have gone on there and being able to make that connection to the Elm Creek Park Reserve, a person could really spend a day with their families outside enjoying it. So what we're looking for is the funding to create the trail connections between between Mississippi Point Park and the Elm Creek Park Reserve, as in the diagram, and then making a pedestrian bridge crossing that will allow us then to complete that final leg to connect to the Elm Creek Park Reserve. So that's really what it boils down to. Like I said, the this plan and portions of this trail have been in place for decades already. And they're kind of like trails to nowhere. And with this funding, we'll be able to provide that opportunity to connect these trails finally and make that connection to the Elm Creek Park Reserve. So that being said, I am extremely eager to hear Mary Murphy's stories. So I am going to reserve my time. And if I have our Parks and Facilities Manager here, Charlie Lane, if you had any questions for him or myself, I would love to stand by and answer anything that you have.
Thank you, Mayor. Great presentation, and I'm sure the trail use is through the roof. We've just been seeing that in all the trails, you know, during COVID especially, people are getting outside and just extreme interest. So thank you for bringing this. Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. You said this has been going on for decades. And so I'm wondering what the process was for any local contributions and how much local funding has gone into it and what other sources of funding have gone into this this trail besides state funds.
That's an excellent. Yeah, thank you very much, Representative Green. I appreciate that. That is an excellent question. And I'll jump into it a little bit, and then I'll maybe defer a little bit to our Parks and Facilities Manager, Charlie Lane. So for starters, one of the photos that we have is the area that's under construction right now on the Mississippi Point Park. And just a couple of years ago, there's our, if you can see that there is our Mississippi Point Park improvements that we have. And that would be the, like, let's call it the trailhead for this whole thing. And part of that, which made this possible, this project possible, believe it or not, a construction, a highway construction project that redeveloped Highway 169 along that curve to cross the Mississippi River. And with that, we put in a pedestrian underpass to go under the highway there that allows us to then get on the west side of 169. And then that trail segment goes down to Hayden Lake Road and crosses the Elm Creek in order to start that trail connection. And part of the funding that we had, and my Parks and Facility Manager, Charlie Lane, can correct me if I'm wrong, but when we had got the funding to do the shoreline stabilization project for the Elm Creek and Mill Pond area, we were able to put in these trail connections on the west side of the highway, as well as bring that all the way out to Cartway to the west. And that has been a large part of the most recent trail connection funding that we have gotten from legacy money from the DNR, from local matches that we had on those programs as well. So that's kind of a lot of what we had just recently. All of the other funding that we've had in correct me if I'm wrong, but has been local money as far as putting trails in over the last several decades to make these trails when we could. A lot of it has to do with this land acquisition. We built trails when we could until we had no more land left to build these trails, and that's where this bill comes into play, is that we're making those final connections to be able to connect those pieces together. So that being said, I'm gonna turn over to Charlie Lane to maybe give you a little bit more detail.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members, and to Representative Green's question, if I may, a little bit more particular. We've had three federal grants, one on our Cartway area here, sir, that was a connection link that we did with federal money in 2016. Another one, you'd seen another picture where we demonstrated a tunnel under 169. That was also done with federally funded dollars along with the project. And then we've recently also have another federal assistance grant to assist us with this leg to reconstruct it. It's over 35 years old. And as the mayor had mentioned, we are trying to connect and make some of these proposed trail linkages and create that thoroughfare all the way through the Greenway corridor. So the other significant part of this is we are connected regionally now with Three Rivers Park District to the west to the large park, as was mentioned before. And the significant part of what you saw at the river where the mayor showed the Mississippi Point Park was that now Three Rivers Park District is in control of our Mississippi River Trail, which is one and the same as the West Mississippi River Regional Trail in the future. So you can see as that trail actually is scheduled to come out of Minneapolis. Most of the connections are made in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and now last year we were fortunate to get the agreement completed with Three Rivers Park District and Dayton to our north, so that there's connections all the way along that West Mississippi that will connect and tie to this Elm Creek corridor. So with that state significance, there's regional significance all the way out, and we're going to connect to our northern suburb cities in the future with this. So there is quite a bit of significance to what we'd like to accomplish here, and we believe that there's going to be a lot of people using it. We're in phase one of a development on the Mississippi Crossings area, and phase two has just begun in the infrastructure. So we're close, and with your help, we can complete these, and very grateful for the assistance that we had through the Mill Pond and some of these other grants. So with that, I'll conclude my comments.
Thank you, sir. Representative Green?
Just, I don't think I got an answer to my question, but if I could get a breakdown of what the local contributions were. Sounds like most of it is some kind of state or federal money. And I just was wondering if the local people really had any skin in the game here, or if there was enough support locally for the trail, or if it's just all being put together only if you can get funds from outside the area. So if they could provide that, that'd be great.
Representative Stevenson and the mayor and the team, I'm sure you've heard the question, and you can work with Representative Green to help that. So I'm comfortable. Please answer his question when as you can. Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Mayor and planner, tell me if there's connection with the water. Can people go from the creek to the Mississippi River by a jet ski or by a paddle bike, or is there water access from the two places, or is this just a trail?
Representative
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. That is an excellent question. And I'll say this, that it is connected by water everywhere. There's opportunities for people to connect with the water on all parts of this. In fact, we have also had discussions about providing opportunities for a person, if they chose to in the future, create facilities where a person can rent a kayak and take a kayak down this entire Elm Creek all the way to the Mississippi Point Park area and the Elm Creek area that we're talking about, and be able to connect in this whole area. There is ice fishermen out on the Mill Pond right now where this trail connection goes, and there's opportunities for people to walk into the Elm Creek on any of these stretches as well. As Charlie had mentioned earlier, we've been fortunate with DNR grants to do restoration projects on this entire stretch of the river until we get to the Elm Creek Park Reserve. And we're on the last leg of that right now. And once that's completed, largely that entire stretch of the Elm Creek will be navigable by water, not for like a boat or anything like that, but with canoes and kayaks and paddle boards and things like that.
Great.
Mr. Chair, if I could just briefly.
Yes, Representative.
I just want to say that there is the Elm Creek, there is a dam on the Elm Creek right before it reaches the Mississippi River. So, Representative Murphy, you're going to have to portage your jet ski.
Not a roundabout, so that's good.
That last leg there. I can't believe I didn't mention that one of the things that this would connect to is a new trout pond that the mayor has been developing there in Champlain. And they actually just had the second annual very successful trout fishing contest, complete with the golden trout that he has stocked the lake with. And just for the committee's benefit, I did invite Chair Lilly to be the celebrity guest judge of the trout fishing contest last year. He was unavailable, but I'm really hoping that we can get Chair Lilly out to be the celebrity guest judge of the trout fishing contest sometime in the future.
Yes. Yes.
I'd be honored to come.
Yeah. Members of the committee, thank you, Zach, for bringing that. That project has been a dream of mine for a number of years, and we just had it this weekend, and we were fortunate to have, we did two groups because of COVID challenges, two groups of 250, and we sold it out in 3 days. A lot of people in the community. The goal was to bring the kids out. My passion is to provide these fishing opportunities for the kids. And it was amazing to see, you know, hundreds of kids out there fishing with their parents and taking part in it. And it was just a great experience. And this trail is within feet of that trout pond as well. And thank you for bringing that up. It's something that I'm very proud of.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Representative Stevenson. Representative Jordan's reminding me that it's an amazing neighborhood, fishing opportunities there for neighborhood kids and people to get on the water quite easily. And that's just fantastic. That's what we want. Representative Stevenson, I know you've been, I've heard about this project. I've heard about the fish. I heard about it, every aspect of it. It's, I feel like I've been there. I want to get out there and see the golden trout and cross-country ski there too, I hear. We didn't even get into that. So, Representative Stevenson, any final comments?
No, I think I appreciate the committee's time.
Thank you. This morning, I'll renew my motion that House File 481 be laid over. Thank you, Representative Stevenson and the mayor and your team. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So next we have House File 1331, Representative Keeler. Good morning. Are you with us? Yeah, I see you are. And I'd like to move that House File 1331 be laid over for possible inclusion. Good morning, Representative Keeler, and tell us about what you have going on this project. It sounds great.
Hello, yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to talk about the Red River Bison Project. And so I think that we all agree that when we get out into nature, it's the best way to learn. We also understand that education is the foundation for our next generations. It's important that we get out into nature and understand the possibilities, not only on how we can impact and positively impact Mother Earth, but also it opens up opportunities for the future and what we might become. I think that as scientists, there's always been a moment in people's lives that was that aha moment that realized that they had this massive possibility. And so for 26 years, this program has been working around the Red River and around the counties. And we would just like to extend that. It works with programs K through 12, and it gets kids out into nature. And so with that, I hope that you support this effort, and I'm going to pass it over to our testifiers. Thank you.
So thank you, Representative Keeler. So we have Ms. Graham. Welcome to our committee. I don't know if you're starting, but please go ahead if you are. Thank you.
Thank Welcome. You, Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Keeler. I am honored to be here with you today to share about the importance of our watershed education programming in the Red River Basin. Before I introduce two of our teachers who will be testifying about their participation in our programming, along with a past program participant, I will be giving you a brief overview of Riverwatch and its related components. The Riverwatch program itself operates as a standalone extracurricular or as an add-on to a high school course, reaching students grades 6 through 12. It gives students who are interested in the environment, watersheds, and natural resources the opportunity to develop their passions by delving into their local sub-watershed in a holistic manner. Riverwatch students engage in a variety of activities, including water quality monitoring, an annual forum competition and presentation, macroinvertebrate sampling, kayaking on their local waterways, and continuous monitoring of their tributaries. As we developed and grew the Riverwatch program during its first 20 years in the Red River Basin, we began to recognize a gap in students' fundamental understanding of their sense of place. Students exhibited a disconnect in how they and their community interacted with the land and water, both upstream and downstream of them. To address this disconnect, we developed River of Dreams, an education program that targets fourth through fifth graders. River of Dreams introduces students to watershed concepts as well as their own watershed, connecting them with the ever-changing environment around them, while also preparing them to engage deeper in the River Watch program in the future. River of Dreams is implemented through a classroom presentation paired with a hands-on component where students decorate a small canoe, dream about where it can travel, and launch it into their watershed, tracking its journey along the way to the sea. River of Dreams is conducted with every student in a grade, with the goal of educating an entire generation of future decision makers. Though I've had the immense privilege to watch the program grow, spreading to include rural schools in both Minnesota and North Dakota, tribal nations within the Red River Basin, as well as the diverse populations of our major cities, the teachers of Marshall County Central have been some of the longest standing participants in our watershed programming. Here with us today is Diane Waterworth, a fifth grade teacher who has been a part of River of Dreams since our pilot program began, and Katie Melgard, a high school science teacher who leads the Riverwatch program at Marshall County Central. Alongside Diane and Katie, we have Laura Bell here with us. Not only is Laura Bell a past participant of Riverwatch, but she's a role model for many who hope to work or enter the field of natural resources, particularly for young women. I know she is for me. I'll now hand it over to Katie and Diane, and then Laura will follow. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Graham. I'm not sure I heard two names, so I'm not sure who's next. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Katie Melgard, and I teach high school science at Marshall County Central High School in Newfoldon, Minnesota. So we're far northwestern Minnesota. I've been working with the Riverwatch program for many years, both as an extracurricular activity and as a part of my classes. We have participated in the water monitoring and the yearly form, as well as doing some of the kayaking and other parts and pieces of the program. The students and I have conducted monthly water monitoring where the students test and analyze our local river conditions. We've been on kayak trips and really large Voyager canoe trips. Many of our students have never done anything like this before. We have stories and memories from these experiences that students talk about year after year. Each year, the Riverwatch program issues a challenge for our students. Through these challenges, we complete research, identify problems, and develop solutions, all related to our local river and our community. My students have designed and taught lessons about our watershed to several elementary grades in our district. My students have gone to the local mayor and secured funding for, and then completed, a graffiti cleanup project on a bridge in our town. My students have learned and developed posters that have been on display at the local community center to educate our community about our local water conditions. Through all these events, my students are able to complete hands-on, real-world experiences that have allowed them to grow in knowledge and appreciation of their local watershed. I have found my students consider being a part of Riverwatch to be a meaningful and valuable experience. I myself think that my Riverwatch students have become better citizens because of this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then who is next? I'm sorry, Miss Waterworth.
Hi, thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to share with you. My name is Diane Waterworth, and I teach fifth grade in New Fulton Elementary. And I've been a teacher for many, many years. And because of that, I have a lot of wisdom to draw on about curriculum. And I can confidently say that this River of Dreams program is an excellent curriculum. It's designed to entice the students into learning. They learn about their local watershed district by the activities that are hands-on, and it includes them as a part of the process, not just as a bystander. They become part of it. The whole concept starts with a book called Paddle to the Sea, and this sparks their interest, and it helps them realize the role that they play in the local watershed as a part of the big picture. And again, we use real world experiences and hands-on things to do this. They decorate a canoe. I don't know if you can see it. I have one here from a student that moved away that started last year. And that really gives them ownership. They get to design that canoe the way they feel that projects themselves. And the climax of the project comes the day that they get to release these canoes into their local river. And then it continues, though. Their anticipation continues long after that day, because they want to check and they want to go to the website and see if there have been any possible sightings, or they beg to go down to the river and see if they could possibly find a remnant of somebody's from the years this year or from years before. And they get to use this curriculum in so many ways. We can calculate in math. We learn through science. We do the reading. There's just so many ways that this curriculum helps them to understand things and the big picture. Having been a part of this project for many, many years, I can attest that this project is a true testament to the philosophy that we've heard: tell me I forget, teach me and I remember, but involve me and I understand. And such a big thing and part of this, I feel, is that when it's a time when kids are spending way too much time in front of a screen, I can think of nothing better than this River of Dreams project, that it lures these kids out into the elements. They learn and they experience firsthand. And doing this makes them better informed, and by that becoming more knowledgeable to make decisions and become problem solvers as adults. Thank you.
Thank you. The canoe does every student get a canoe?
Every student gets a canoe.
Wow, neat. They can decorate it. Mr. Kingery? Or is it Ms. Bell? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair? Yep, thank you. Welcome. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Laura Bell, and I'm a lab coordinator and naturalist at the University of Minnesota in Crookston in the Natural Resources Program. My involvement started back 26 years ago, so I was about 4 when I started, just so you know. No. And at the pilot program at Climax High School. So I was a farm kid from a small town and community, and I knew I loved nature, and I knew I loved the outdoors, and I knew I was intrigued by science. So when the opportunity for me came to sign up for Riverwatch, I took it and I ran with it, and I absolutely loved it. Being able to do that real science and get hands-on experience that Riverwatch offered really helped shape my career path and get me to where I am today in the science and nature field. When I was hired on at the university, I was given the opportunity to work with Riverwatch once again. To come back to the program, I was able to help and lead students that were once where I was, and it was incredible. Also, to see how much Riverwatch had grown into so many other schools and small towns and communities was so neat. I definitely think that having the students learn that basic knowledge of their watershed, where they are in it and their part in it, is so important, especially in the Red River Valley, where we deal with so many different aspects of water, including flooding yearly, typically. For the students to be able to understand that all, and again, have that baseline knowledge is incredible. These students are the next generation of land stewards and the people that will be making these decisions. So having them equipped with the knowledge and hopefully the appreciation is imperative in my mind. The funding that's provided for Riverwatch allows them to keep forging ahead and even expand more to keep these wonderful programs going and also keep up with the technology that's changing. having real-time access to monitoring data for these students is unbelievable. I can't even imagine what that would have been like when I started. So I definitely feel that Riverwatch has had such a positive impact on me. It helped shape me into a better person through different experiences it offered and helped me get me to where I am today, which is a place that I absolutely love. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. Mr. Kingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Asher Kingery, and I'm here on behalf of the International Water Institute. We're here today to discuss the importance of meaningful watershed education experiences. The Red River Basin Riverwatch program continues to create opportunities for students to be engaged in their local community and to take a lifelong understanding of watersheds with them, no matter where they go or what career path they choose. It is important to recognize that these meaningful experiences build passion and inspire our students in their formative years. Even the simple lesson of water flowing downhill is the essential beginning for truly understanding watershed science. Our students and teachers take part in a wide variety of activities that give them a deeper understanding of water resources and allow them to take ownership in their watershed. We've had Riverwatch teams make canoe and kayak routes in their towns, lead adult education in community centers, and create watershed activities for younger students. Our watersheds here in Minnesota are affected by the people who live in them. And as the next generation is faced with a changing environment, changing hydrology, and ultimately changing communities, we must strengthen students' critical thinking skills and further their understanding of water resources. Our programming runs at the basin level. So here in the Red River Basin, we are able to have schools in both North Dakota and Minnesota in one program with the watershed in common. As we continue to build partnerships across the state, it is our intention to help other basin programs start and be successful in educating students about their local watershed and the watersheds of Minnesota. After a decade of working in this field, I've had the opportunity to supervise Riverwatch interns within our organization to help connect them with employment opportunities at watershed districts, to serve as a reference for hire, and to work alongside with them professionally. Lastly, I ask you to imagine an entire generation of Minnesotans who understand and appreciate their local river and watershed. A generation that, when they pass over a bridge, they already know the name of the river they're crossing and where it goes. A generation that knows that water in Minnesota flows to Hudson Bay, the Gulf of Mexico, and through the Great Lakes. A generation of water leaders who can solve the water resource challenges together. I want to thank you for your time and consideration, and I ask for your support of the Red River Basin Riverwatch program. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, and thank you, all of you. We have some member questions. Representative Erdahl, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that my question is probably of Mr. Kingery, and that is that, okay, we have the River Watch program in the Red River Basin. I think you mentioned trying to get this going in other basins. Do we have it in any other basins at the present time?
Mr. Kingery or Ms. Graham, I see both of you kind of moving.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and member, there are some other programs in place. I know that there's been discussions with other portions of the state to unify and work together to offer the programming. I know there is a specific program in the Minnesota River Valley. There have been other portions of the state that have had some level involvement. I know in the Lake Superior watershed, there have been some programs that we've provided some, assistance or guidance in how we operate our water quality monitoring. So there are some programs around, and we would love to all work together.
Mr. Chair, can I jump in, please?
Yes, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. That's actually a really good question. You know, when you have an amazing program going on, you want to make sure you expand it to other areas across the state. That's the beauty of education, and that's the beauty of doing this work. And so I don't know, where in the process. We actually do have an amendment on this language that Representative Bowe brought to us. So I don't know. I know that usually at the beginning, but it kind of addresses this question as far as the expansion efforts. So I don't know if we want to address that now or if we want to do that later, but I agree with you, Representative Erdahl. Great programs need to be spread across the state.
Sounds like a great lead into the motion for the amendment, but Representative Erdahl?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other quick question. I think this would be of Ms. Graham, and that is, are there, you request funding from Legacy, are there other sources from which you you request money?
Ms. Graham.
I'll actually hand it over to Mr. Kingery to answer that question.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member. I am not sure, so I know that there is, this may be a question for Lisa Furnett. I know that she might have the most knowledge.
Ms. Furnett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, my name is Lisa Furnett, and I represent the Red River Watershed Management Board and the International Water Institute on the River Watch Program. First, I'd like to thank Representative Kuehler for bringing this bill forward. To answer your first question, Representative Erdahl, we were trying to work on a pilot program this year to get the River Watch program into other areas. I have noticed over the years that there are little pockets of watershed districts that are asking for funding, and I thought rather than having it being so dispersed, it would be better to bring it together. I had also been asked by Chair Hansen and Senator Rood to try to harmonize the programs. We have not, to answer this, so we're working on that. Unfortunately, due to what we considered fiscal restraints and not being able, not being sure if we could pull together a pilot program or two this year, we were asked to hold back and not present a pilot program as of yet. So we were going to work on that over the course of the summer to get it prepared for next year after we figured out what the budget was. We have not gone anywhere except for to the Clean Water Council for funding because we our intent is to make sure the kids are educated on this and have felt that this is the proper place to go for the funding. And we have not been granted the funding through the Clean Water Council. We get all the way to the top, but then they decide that they don't want to fund us. So in the past years, we have been working with the legislature to get money for through the Clean Water Council from the MPCA's water quality and monitoring program, which is where we've received the funding. I'm not sure if we fit into the LCCMR program, but we'd certainly be willing to look into whether or not that fit within the guidelines of our program and what they need from us. We would, again, like to expand this. I know Representative Bowe is going to be offering an amendment to this, which we've discussed, which will take the program through the Minnesota River Basin, which will bring it, which will expand the amount of counties and watershed districts that will be able to apply for funding to get the kids out onto the river to learn more. Again, they don't just do water quality monitoring. Up in the Red River, we do snow depth. We do things with, water quality, snow depth, just flood hazard mitigation are some of the aspects that we highlight. So that's where we are with that. And we're hoping, again, that maybe the Minnesota River Watch program, which will be added on today, will be a starting point for us to start to harmonize and bring everybody in the state together on this.
Thank you, Ms. Furnett and Representative Erdahl. Good question.
Just to follow up quickly, thank you for that information. And I have been hearing from the Minnesota River Basin group as well about concerns for funding. So I know they're very interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Bowe, I think we're going to slap on your amendment here, if that's since it's mentioned by the author, and it sounds like you two have worked together, Representative Bowe. We have an A1 amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay, so that's been moved.
I would just say quickly, the River Watch is a great program. It creates many positive impacts in our communities and along our water watersheds. I could highlight those if you wish, but in the interest of time, I would just simply like to thank the author for bringing this bill forward. And I hope that Representative Keeler would consider my A1 amendment to be a friendly amendment. Thank you.
Representative Keeler.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I think it's great when we have opportunities to move programs across the state that impact our next generations. Representative Bowe and I have had multiple conversations about this, and I accept the amendment.
Thank you. It's really neat to see that you're collaborating and working together. It's important to me and to other committee members, I know. Any questions in regards to the amendment? I see two hands up, but I think they were more general questions. So seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Your amendment's added to the bill. So thank you both for working together and collaborating. Representative, I'm not sure, I think Representative Jordan was next. Representative Jordan, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill together, for bringing this project for us. I know you're really passionate about women and students of color learning about STEM with hands-on experiences. And I'm glad we're talking about that. I'm hoping that maybe you or one of the testifiers can talk a little bit about some of the cultural heritage, since this is the legacy amendment associated with our watersheds. There's quite a bit of history, particularly with our Native American history here in Minnesota along both the Red River, but also the Minnesota River, which we are now talking about. So can you talk a little bit about how some of the cultural heritage and history of Minnesota will be incorporated with these programs.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Ms. Graham?
Thank you, Chair and Representative Jordan. Particularly the River of Dreams program, it is based on this book, Paddle to the Sea, which actually is about a young Indian boy who carves a canoe and launches it into the local waterways. So that kind of starts the conversation, and we encourage teachers that however they can fit into their curriculum, they can add on to how they use River of Dreams. They can go into the fur trade. They can talk about history. So just fundamentally, we have that portion there. And there's been different ways that we've been able to use that in the past. And just this year, we're working with East Grand Forks School District, who has an American Indian coordinator that they're working with the nations within their community to incorporate even more history into the River of Dreams program. So we're excited to see how that continues to grow from what it is now. Just this morning, I got an email that's about connecting with an elder of the community who knows more about the history of canoes. So I'm really, really excited to see where that goes, in particular to the Native American community. I don't know, Mr. Kingery, if you have anything to add to that question.
Since the time, I think, go ahead, quick. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I was just going to say that we are, we're very proud to say that our program participants are made up of over 60% of young women are make up River Watch. And in an area of the Red River Basin, we have around 10% of a minority status involved in our programming. So we're very proud of that fact. And as you can see today, many women are involved in our programming, and it's great that we have them be the example.
Thank you. Representative Jordan, any further questions? Okay, you're good. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like we're running really late. I got three questions. I'm going to ask them all. If there's not time, I understand, but I would like the answers offline if I could. The River Watch has been in effect for 26 years, you said. Legacy hasn't been around that long, and it looks like this was your only source of funding. You had to have funded it some other way, because I'd like to know how it was funded before. If the legacy money is now replacing or adding to other programs that were somehow funded in a different way. I'd also like to know if they use the information that they gather or if it's just inside the classroom. And then there was a comment made about kids coming in from North Dakota. I want to be really careful here not to cross any lines, and so to make sure that the money is used in Minnesota and for Minnesota kids. And so I'd like answers to those questions if I could get it. And then the last part of that, I guess, is a four part, is how does the $300,000 compare to what the asks have been in the past? Because I don't think they've seen that much money for quite some time, and but I don't have like the last current years on off the site.
Thank you, Ms. Graham and Mr. Kingery. Did you hear the questions? I was wondering if you could maybe answer, you know, just at least the first one. So just kind of maybe get that, and then we need to move on. And then please send the answers to all of us for the others.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Green. I will just say that I believe in 1995, it was a small-scale pilot project with the Sandhill Watershed District to include four schools. In 2002, I believe it was either MPCA or Bowser provided some assistance to grow even more schools. All along, there has been match from the Red River Watershed Management Board up in the Red River Basin. And since it was about the time I started here, around 2010 is when we started to seek more of the legacy dollars. On the data is used and is incorporated into the MPCA data set, statewide data, and all North Dakota money, North Dakota events, if we ever do joint events, it is all very clearly on one side of the river or the other. So it's used in its appropriate state.
Thank you both, and please be available for Representative Green or other members with further questions. Representative Keeler, neat project. It's nice to see you this morning. Welcome to the legacy, and if you have any final comments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My only comments is when we invest in our generations coming up and we invest in clean water, it's a win-win for everybody. So I appreciate you all taking the time to listen to us today. We look forward to moving on with this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler and presenters. That was really neat. Makes me want to get out on the water. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1331, as amended, be laid over. Thank you. Representative Murphy, we don't have a bill per se, but you've been a leader on libraries, and when the bill comes, if it does, you'll be the author, I'm certain of. But if you'd like to kind of kick off and tell us about the wonderful libraries in Minnesota and how the legacy is helping them. We need you to unmute. There we go.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know about all the wonderful libraries in Minnesota, but I know about the regional library system, which is very similar to the regional arts system that we talked about the other day, the regional arts councils. And it's always been my hope to connect the funds, and incorporating things that each of the funds could do together and to connect Minnesota more thoroughly through the legacy funding of programming and so forth. We have two guests today that are here to talk about the importance of programming monies going to the regional library system, the 12 regional library systems, and the kinds of programming that encourage them to work together with other community organizations. And we also have Beth Burns is here today from the Friends of the St. Paul Public Library, who has a partnership, who has a Minnesota Center for the Book, which is a partnership with the Library of Congress. And I think I will claim some portion of another meeting to tell my stories that I have prepared for this meeting so that we can listen to the guests that are here
and I can create another atmosphere another day for libraries so that we won't go over time. So Executive Director Smith from the Viking Library System will tell us about the importance of programming and the funding of the legacy money to the libraries for programming and how they reach out to the communities, people in the communities, to in that programming. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Chair Murphy, and welcome, Ms. Smith.
Ms. Smith.
Good morning. Thank you. Please
introduce yourself. Good morning, Chairman Lilly and committee members. My name is Erin Smith, and I am the director of the Viking Library System. We're located in West Central Minnesota and one of 12 regional library systems, which Representative Murphy just discussed, in that serve Minnesota residents. And I'm honored to be with you and our partners today to request $2.5 million annually in funding for the next 2 years for library legacy programming and $125,000 annually for the Minnesota Center for the Book. Again, thank you to Representative Mary Murphy for authoring the Library Legacy Bill and for her support for the work of Minnesota's public libraries. Arts, cultural, and heritage funding for libraries provides quality educational and enrichment opportunities that reach every corner of our state through Minnesota's 365 public libraries. We use a thoughtful formula that's based on population, geographical reach, and total number of libraries in each region to distribute funds across the 12 regional systems. Minnesota's public library systems have been the fortunate recipients of arts and cultural heritage funds since 2009, and statewide public libraries have held more than 28,300 programs, classes, and projects in partnership with arts and cultural organizations, independent artists, historical societies, and community organizations. And libraries have counted more than 2,320,000 participants in those free and open programs. When Minnesota's public libraries made the difficult decision to close library doors to help limit the spread of COVID-19, they opened doors to new and innovative ways to serve their communities in a time of great need. Librarians sprang into action to reinvent library services, loaning out internet hotspots and technology, providing contactless service, partnering with communities to meet local needs, and transforming vital classes and events supported through library legacy funding. In York Mills, for example, the indoor screenings of films at the library morphed into socially distanced drive-in movies that were held in the school and library parking lots. In St. Paul, libraries partnered with local musicians to connect community members to performances through virtual mini concerts. And residents of long-term care facilities in my own region here in West Central Minnesota took virtual trips to the Arrowhead and Iron Range with Minnesota photographer and author Doug Ullman. Throughout the pandemic, following library legacy events, Minnesotans took the time out of their days to fill out evaluation forms, send us emails, and make personal phone calls thanking us for providing online legacy programs. Time and again, Minnesotans told us that their library was an important touchstone and lifeline during the pandemic, and that library legacy programs helped maintain their connection to their communities. Parents of students told us, these online learning programs have been so important to us during the pandemic. And rural residents said, virtual legacy programs have offered so much more access in rural areas to the arts, informational classes, and entertainment. Minnesota's public libraries support and serve BIPOC artists and communities through legacy funding. In 2020, legacy funds supported Dakota County Library's virtual Spanish Storytime series, Lake Agassiz Regional Library's virtual conversation about race in Minnesota with Jason Soule, criminal justice educator and author of the book Prison to PhD, a memoir of hope, resilience, and second chances, and Hennepin County Library's Victory Rally Toy Theater Project, which provided K through 12 students with an art kit designed by multidisciplinary Indigenous artist Gracie Horn. Using the kits, students created paper puppets and a small theater, and then wrote and filmed a story with the theme of demonstrating a feeling of victory over racism. Participating students, families, and educators stated the Victory Rally Project presented a welcomed and uplifting way to talk about racism and creating change. In partnership with the Minnesota Center for the Books, One Book, One Minnesota Project, public libraries throughout the state have hosted legacy-funded programs supporting BIPOC writers and artists, expanding cultural awareness and encouraging connectedness. Legacy funding for public libraries extends access to necessary arts, cultural, and heritage programs to all Minnesotans, resulting in a truly better Minnesota. Thank you. I know our time is short and we're approaching our time limit, so I appreciate your time this morning. And it's my pleasure to turn the conversation back to you, Chairman Lilly, and to our library legacy partner, Beth Burns, with the Minnesota Center for the Book.
Sorry. Thank you, Ms. Smith and Ms. Burns. I think I'm going to have to definitely have you back. I certainly want to hear Chair Murphy's more of her stories and such, but I definitely want to hear from you folks too, some more. So we'll probably have you back, but we're going to have to end at 10, but please go ahead when you're ready and try to watch the clock a little. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, that's not fair. We'll both come back another day.
Okay.
Does she want to just... Ms. Burns has more than 1 minute to of remarks that she has to make, and so she'd be glad to come back.
Fantastic. I'll respect that, and the committee will as well. Ms. Murphy and Ms. Smith, you did a great job, and I've heard Ms. Burns before, and I definitely want to hear your story, and I want to hear more about the libraries and what they're doing all over the state, and I love that you've adapted with COVID, and certainly members will have questions as well, so hopefully you're open to coming back. Please accept my my invite, and we'll definitely have you back. And then I'm certain Representative Verdal, I want to know how many of you have his books in his his books in your, if they're in your libraries or not, and then probably why, I want to know. But anyways, well, thank you. I think we're at a perfect point probably to wrap up. Great presentations today. Again, thank you all members. My apologies to the library folks this morning, but we'll certainly have you back, and I know you're doing a good job. And it was just really inspiring to hear much of the discussion that we heard today. So with that, the Legacy Committee is adjourned. Thank you. Have